So when I first moved to Maine, I'm originally from Ohio, if you didn't know that. When I first moved to Maine, there was this attraction that you Mainers really love that I'm going to be frank with you this morning. I just don't get. Like, I just don't understand why you do it. And maybe part of it's just because there aren't any of these in Ohio where we're from, or really from any other state for that matter. But you Mainers love it. You find it to be a fun attraction, and maybe it's a generalization, but a lot of you, for some reason, like to go to lighthouses. Like, listen, I'm not anti-lighthouse, okay? But I think after 30 seconds of looking at one lighthouse, I think I've seen every lighthouse. Like, they look the same. They have the same shape. They have a light on top. Great. Okay, I'm ready to go. Let's go home. Anywhere else, right? Listen, I know I'm going to get rebuked after the service for making such a hypocritical comment, but I mean, it's just my thought. And listen, like, the reason that lighthouses were built, it wasn't because they were intended to be an attraction, right? No one just built a lighthouse just because they wanted something that looked pretty on the seacoast, right? What's the purpose of a lighthouse? Very good unified answer right there, okay? Yeah, so it shines light, right? So that those that are at sea, that are sailing, can be able to see the dangers that are around them, to be able to guide against the chaotic waters, and to find themselves to safety. Without one, sailors are lost. With one, it might save lives. You can look at about almost anything in life, and you can probably figure out what the purpose is for that thing, right? This table has a purpose. What is the table? Purpose of this table? It's to keep the things on, keep things held up, right? When I'm using this microphone, the reason I'm using this microphone is to amplify my voice. You can understand the purpose behind almost anything you can think of. But when I ask you the question, what is your purpose? Well, that's a little bit of a trickier question, isn't it? Because for all of us, we might not know that answer. It's kind of more complicated. And maybe ask the question, like, why am I here? Like, what have I been called to do? What is my purpose in life? You know, there was one guy in the Bible that was on this journey of purpose himself. His name was Simon. You might know him as Simon Peter. And for Simon, he was just another fisherman on the Sea of Galilee. This was the routine of his day. He would cast nets into the sea, bring those nets right back out, most likely find nothing in those nets, and continue to repeat the process day after day after day, this kind of grind, mundane purpose. He was a dead-end fisherman. But then something happens. Jesus steps onto his boat, and something changes right there. Because as soon as he steps on the boat, it only takes one command. Put your nets on the other side. It only takes one miraculous sign where there's so much fish that it starts to overflow the boats that are there, that Simon Peter starts to learn that, man, this isn't just about fish anymore. This is so much bigger than fish. Catching fish. In fact, it's about a different kind of catching. Jesus looks at him and says this in Luke chapter 5. He says, from this point forward, Simon, you will be catching men. You won't be catching fish anymore, but you will be leading individuals who are spiritually wandering, lost in the chaotic waters of our world, and you'll be leading them to the hope and purpose and joy and love that is found in me, in Jesus. And so we see in a moment, we find that maybe even Peter wasn't looking for purpose, but boy, purpose found him. He left his career, he left his livelihood, he left everything for it. And maybe you're here today and you're looking for that kind of purpose. Like, you're looking for something that is bigger than you. I think for all of us, when the shot clock of our lives hits zero, I think we want to know that we made our lives count for something. That it, whatever we did, that it was worth doing, that it made a difference in people's lives. And you want to jump out of bed in the morning just being excited for what you're doing because you have a purpose behind what you are doing. And I think this is wired within us. I think all of us are trying to find what is my purpose. I think men in the room, I think you uniquely are looking for purpose in life. You want something to fight for, something to sacrifice for, a cause that is greater than yourself. And the question is, where do I find that kind of purpose? A purpose that is greater than myself, that is bigger than myself, even in the things that I'm doing that can be so much deeper, filled with meaning. And what Peter's going to argue today is that he found that in Jesus himself, because he saw that his mission was worth following, not just for the sake of just having a task to do or work to do, but it was one that changes, molds lives over time. That he would interact people in the marketplace and in the streets, people that were desperate and lonely and needing hope, life, purpose, some sort of meaning. And he was able to be part of what Jesus was doing and say, come, follow me. Just as it changed Peter's life, so it changes ours. And the reality is that same invitation, the invitation that was given to Peter so many thousands of years ago, is the same invitation that we are called on to today. We have been going week by week. We're in the final week of our Scattered Ascent series. We've been talking about our church mission and vision. We've been talking about the direction of where we're going, and we've been talking about just really kind of reshaping this mission that's always been there from the inception of this church. And it's the reality that we desire to mobilize people to become transformed followers of Jesus, that we don't want just people to get a ticket into heaven, but we want them to be radically changed, just like you see with Peter right here, that it leads them to life-altering decision-making. And so we see with all of this that for Peter, this is what ends up happening to him. And I think what can happen for us sometimes is that we can have a lot of people that are seeking to know Jesus. Maybe you're here today. You're seeking to know about Jesus. You're seeking to know what he has to offer. Some of you have surrendered your life to him, and you're like, man, yes, he is the one that provides the greatest hope, joy, purpose, life, and anything. I want to follow him. Some of you are here today, but you might be here, and you're like, man, I don't even know how to grow. Like, I don't, and we talked about that last week. How do I spiritually grow? Not just in head knowledge, but in heart knowledge that leads us to action. And that's what we're going to talk about today, is ultimately, if your life is, as a follower of Jesus, is characterized by these three things, but it doesn't characterize these two, then we're missing a massive part of the journey that Jesus says when he says, follow me. And so today, we're going to be looking at these things, especially this concept of going. When we say we want to go as a church, what do we desire? We desire that for people, you and I, to be sent out to show and to share the love of Jesus. That comes through our speaking, to share life to people, share truth with people, but at the same time, to be able to show that love to other people. It's through word and through deed. And the reality is that for many of us, we have stayed in this spiritual greenhouse. Do you know what a greenhouse is? You know what I'm talking about when I talk about greenhouse? No one? Okay, wonderful. It's a place where plants are cultivated, grow. There is no harm to those plants. It'll just stay in this little bubble so it can flourish. Listen, there's a point in time for that. But at the end, we are not called to stay in the spiritual greenhouse. We're not called to just stay in our Christian bubble. We're called to engage with the world. Not to be of the world, but we are called to engage with it, to be part of God's redeeming of this broken world. Can I get an amen that this world is broken and needs Jesus? Thank you. And the reality is that you can be a part of that, of the redeeming nature of this world. You might be thinking to yourself, Adam, I don't even know where to begin with this. Like, how do I go? Where do I go? What do I do? Like, what are things that I am supposed to go towards? And I just want to provide some different ways for you to be able to go. You have probably thought through these already, but I even want to challenge some of our thinking this morning on maybe why we don't do these things at the same time. Four things that I want to share with you, ways that you can go, and maybe challenge you this morning with this question: how is God calling you to go? First, I'd suggest, if you're not already, to serve within the local church, within our church. Listen, I know when Pastor Nick says on the screen, hey, listen, you know, we need nursery help. Like, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, well, that's just glorified babysitting, Adam. Like, I mean, that's really what it is. Just say it for what it is. Can I reorient our thinking for a minute? I think that in serving in whatever capacity it is, whether you're teaching a Sunday school all the way to the cafe, to greeting at the doors, to whatever it is, I want you to see this as a God-given calling. Let me share a story with you to make the point. There once was a missionary in the 1850s. His name was D.L. Moody. Anybody hear of D.L. Moody before? A few of you? Wonderful. I looked this up. I asked the question. His impact is ginormous. In fact, there was a school that was named after him. It's still there today in Chicago. And one of the things that I just asked was, like, how much of an impact did he make? How many people did he reach? And when I looked it up, it had, and again, 1850s, so not modern day today, that he reached over 1 million people just evangelizing, sharing the good news of Jesus. Now, who was the one that led D.L. Moody to follow Jesus? His name is Edward Kimball. You ever hear of Edward Kimball before? Was he a great theologian? Was he someone that was a great evangelizer and shared the faith to everybody? You know what he was? An elementary Sunday school teacher. You hear me? I don't care if you're greeting. I don't care if you're ushering. I don't care if you're in the cafe. I don't care if you're in the nursery or in Wombaland with our 3 and 4-year-olds or upstreet. I don't care whatever ministry it is, but I want you to see this, that your ministry, where God is placing you and will place you, is a God-given calling that has spiritual, lasting impact beyond what you can see in the day-by-day, week-by-week of serving. I want you to see that it's more than just volunteerism, that what he's calling you to is far greater than that. Maybe today he's calling you to reconsider, man, you know what? Maybe I should get involved serving in our church. There are so many people that walk through the doors that you can have an impact on. For those that are greeting, that are in the cafe, it could be that smile that changes someone's outlook on the church for the first time. Something that simple. It can be caring for little ones in the nursery that allows someone to be able to hear the good news of Jesus in here. Do you see the bigger picture? I think that's what we're missing, is the bigger picture. When we're just so ingrained in serving that we forget the bigger picture. I want you to see that serving is bigger than that. Some of you, you're looking for this, like, ideal position to serve in. And can I tell you something? It's actually, at least personally, it's been one of the greatest gifts to me to serve in the places that I didn't necessarily want to serve in. When I was in Ohio, Tori and I served in the 4-year-old's classroom. Have any of you served in a 4-year-old's classroom? Let me tell you something, it's not the most glamorous thing in the world. Kids screaming over here, kids over here that are trying to fight for a certain toy, right? You're trying to have this world imagination of, like, man, let's have this wonderful Bible study, and what ends up happening? They're not listening. I think they're picking their nose, right? I mean, that's what's happening. But listen, it's the Edward Kimball principle. It is faithfully serving in a capacity, praying for the people that you're interacting with, and serving wholeheartedly that ends up changing people over time. I love when I hear of stories of people that have served in a ministry for like 10, 15, 20 years, and they saw the impact of someone that grew up as a kid, came to be an adult, and talked about the impact that they had on them. You can have that impact if you say yes. Maybe we need to serve in church. For some of you today, you might just need to go and have spiritual conversation with someone, a spiritual conversation with one person. I'm not telling you to be a worldwide evangelist. One person that God has placed on your heart and your mind to be able to share, not even just like the grand truths of Scripture, but be able to say, hey, listen, Jesus has changed my life. This is how he changed my life. And I want to share that with you because I want you to have the same hope, joy, purpose, life that I have. It's not simple. It's not rocket science. And you know, I think here's the cool thing with each and every one of us is that you and I are uniquely placed by God in our neighborhoods, in our communities, in our workplaces, in our families, in our friend circles. We each have a unique set of people that we have networks with that are different from me, that are different from you. And we have this opportunity to actually connect with them. And not just connect with them, but be able to share life with them, hope with them, be able to share that Jesus is so much better. It's been so cool, even just as a staff, we've been talking about all these conversations that we've been having, spiritual conversations we've been having, and how it's been just like impacting people's lives. And it's just subtle things. And it just rejuvenates you when you hear these things and you get to have those conversations with people. You can have those conversations. It just might be a simple text today, just saying, hey, I'm praying for you. I just want to share this encouragement with you. That's all you need to do. Maybe you just have one spiritual conversation with somebody today. Maybe some of you, you're ready to get out of these doors. You're like, man, I want to get into our city. I want to make an impact. Great. Try and meet a tangible need in our community and serve them. Listen, all of you are uniquely wired, gifted, passionate about certain things. Can I tell you something? I could never fix anything in your house. Don't ask me to. People that know me well know I'm your last case option. But can I tell you, there's other people in the room? You are uniquely gifted in that way. And you can use that as a ministry opportunity. Did you think about that? You can use how you're gifted to actually serve other people. Some of you might be here today and you're like, man, I don't know what I'm passionate about, or, you know, Adam, I don't really have a skill set. I'm not really good at anything. Can I tell you something? That's a massive lie. We are all gifted. That's kind of diminishing what God has actually given. Don't suppress what God's given you. Show it and utilize that as a way to be able to glorify him. And maybe you're today, you don't know those answers. Listen, take the green card in the back seat in front of you and just write, hey, I need help figuring out my passions. I want to figure out my skill sets. Put in the black box. We want to help you. Sometimes this the first step is just self-discovery, learning about ourselves, being aware that God has uniquely wired, gifted us to be able to serve people in different ways in our community. Maybe that's you. Maybe, and this could be a stretch for some of you, but I want to stretch you a little bit this morning. Maybe some of you are called to go on a missions trip. Listen, and maybe you haven't gone on one before. Maybe it's nationally, maybe it's overseas. And I know there's a cost factor to it. I know all that, but there's a taking time off factor. But it's what I found is with mission trips, they often are the like kind of the catalyst. They're the spark that gets us excited to serve other people when we get back home. And sometimes it gives us a heart for a place that we never would have thought of if we hadn't have gone there. Maybe we just need to take a step of faith. Maybe we need to set aside funds to go and set time off to be able to say, you know what, I want to serve you even with this time off and sacrifice for you. Listen, I believe that as Christians in Maine and Bangor, we are called to be spiritual lighthouses. With all the sailors, metaphorical sailors wandering out spiritually at sea, I think you and I have a unique opportunity to be able to shine a light for the hope of Jesus Christ to people where you're at. That's such a sweet opportunity. And yet, you know what I think is probably the concern is that I think there might be too many people, maybe even in this room right now, that are non-operational spiritual lighthouses. In Maine, there are 65 lighthouses. 8 of them are non-operational. That means they look like a lighthouse, but they don't serve the purpose of a lighthouse. And I wonder if there's Christians here today that look like a Christian, but are not serving the purpose for which God has called you to. Maybe that's you today. I think that's how Simon Peter felt in some sense. At least he got to that point. He started off great, right? He becomes the de facto leader of the Christian movement. And in fact, Jesus renames him Peter because he calls him, because on him the church would be built. He gets inside access into Jesus's life compared to anyone else, and yet his zealous overconfidence starts to destroy him slowly over time. He gets to this point where he's so committed. He'd say, Jesus, I will do anything for you. I will never desert you. I'll stand by you through thick and thin. And yet what happens hours before his crucifixion? He leaves him, right? And in Jesus' greatest despair, we hear a rooster crowing. And at that moment of the rooster crowing, we hear Peter not only not stand by the person that he said he would never leave, but also deny him three times. And so when we see Jesus hanging on a wooden cross, where do we see Peter? Hiding, ashamed, nowhere to be found. He spent three whole years of his life with this grand, life-altering purpose and calling, and it seemingly dies when a stone is rolled in front of the tomb of a lifeless Jesus. But the good news is you know that's not the end of the story. You know that the stone was rolled away. You know that the tomb was empty. You know that he was risen from the dead. And then one day, Jesus basically breaks into the disciples' home, scares them half to death. Can you imagine that? The person you thought was dead is actually alive and ends up in your living room? And he's there, and you can just see the shock in their faces, and he proved to them, I am not dead, but I am alive. I am the Messiah. I am the Son of God. And he was who he said he was. He conquered sin. He conquered death. And ultimately, he is the one who rules and reigns. Happily ever after, right? Not so for Peter. Because when you skip, turn in your Bibles with me, John chapter 21. That's where we're going to camp for the rest of our time. We'll be in Matthew chapter 28 a little bit too. Where do we see Peter? Jesus has already returned. This should be grand news. Awesome stuff that's happening, right? And where do we see Peter? John chapter 21, verse 3. We see that he goes fishing. Simon Peter goes fishing. The disciples themselves say, we'll go with you. They went out, went into the boat, but that night they caught absolutely nothing. Doesn't that picture sound familiar to you? Don't you remember a picture 3 years ago of something that looks exactly like this picture now? A Peter that was fishing, catching nothing, called, and where do we see him now? We see him by a seashore in a boat, doing nothing. Why is he fishing? You know why I think he's fishing? I think he's fishing because I think he feels guilt, and I think he feels shame. Because he thinks to himself, in Jesus' greatest moment of despair, when he probably needed me the most, I abandoned him. Listen, I am not good enough to serve Jesus anymore. Like, I'm not worthy to be his disciple. I blew it. So you know what? I might as well just go back to the thing that I'm actually good at. Might as well just go back to fishing. That's what he does. 3 years, we come back full circle right to where we started. Why do some of us seek after God and even say we surrender to God and even spiritually grow, but why do we not actually go? What stops us from actually going? I want to share just a few reasons with you why I think we don't go as followers of Jesus. What stops us from going? I think there's some reasons that are very valid reasons. I think there's times when we hit physical, mental, maybe emotional challenges that maybe in a season we might need to stop and just focus on ourselves. But you know what? There's different things as well. Sometimes we just overcommit ourselves. We have way too busy of schedules to where going, serving is not a priority in our lives. You know, I think for some of us, you know, we might be more focused in on ourselves. Like I'm just more, I prioritize me more than anybody else. And it might actually lead you to have spiritual apathy, spiritual not really caring about anybody else. And if that's you this morning, if you just kind of like have this disposition of just anger and bitterness towards people, if you really could care less about people, I just want to prod this morning and just ask, like, why is that? For you, like, what? Maybe we need to do some heart surgery and ask, why am I responding that way? Why do I not seem to have any compassion, any care for anybody in the world? Some of you are here today, and listen, you might be in one of these challenges or something like that. Maybe we just need to rethink through how we do serving and going, right? But I think probably one of the biggest stumbling blocks for all of us is the same that Peter had himself. I think for many of us, we have insecurities, we have past failures, maybe we're in current sin issues right now that we're so in, or we're so, we find ourselves so much infatuated with that, man, like, I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy enough, I can't do that. Man, I look at the spiritual side of myself, man, like, if you compared me to anybody else, man, they're so much better than I am spiritually. Just let the professionals do it. And listen, for all of those individuals that really don't know their skill set, they think to themselves, man, you know, like, all those other people are so much more gifted and talented than I am. Like, I should just stay on the sidelines. And we just stay there. Maybe you're here today and you're just like Peter and you think, man, I could never do anything for Jesus that's remotely significant, worthwhile, purposeful. Like, I've tried, I've blown it, I've failed them. Like, let's just let somebody else do it. If that's you today, can I read a passage to you this morning? Keep your finger in John chapter 21. That's where we're gonna be. And what this is what I want you to do. I want you to imagine in this text, Jesus is going to be talking to Peter. It's a foundational moment for Peter. And I want you to imagine that this is you. If you're someone that is dealing with insecurities, past failures, you're even just right now, you feel like I am not worthy enough to be able to serve Jesus. I want you to hear these words that are to Peter, but I think I can say they're to you too. Listen to these words. John chapter 21, verse 15. Maybe you just need to picture this morning and just close your eyes and just imagine this with me. John chapter 21, verse 15 says this. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus pulls aside Simon Peter. And listen to this. He says, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Do you love me more than this boat? Do you love me more than your career? Do you love me more than these fish that are that we're eating? Do you love me more than your lifestyle? Do you love the things that you love the most? Do you love me more than these things? And Peter said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And Jesus says to him, listen to this, feed my lambs, feed the people of God, care for them, your commission. Keep going. He said to him a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And Peter said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And once again, he says, tend my sheep. Tend for the people of God. Care for the people of God. And he said to him a third time, remind me, how many times did Peter deny Jesus? three times. Interesting. He came to him a third time. Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. And listen to this. Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. Did you see what just happened? Jesus could have just left Peter where he was. He could have left him in his, he could have said, you know what? You deserve to be in the doghouse for a little bit and just stay in your spiritual pity. And yeah, you did fail me. Like I expected you to be there. You didn't show up. He could have done that. And what does Jesus do? Not only does he provide the avenue of forgiveness, but notice he recommissions him back to the same task that he was called to before, fully back in. It didn't matter the past failures that you had, Peter. Doesn't matter the insecurities that you might have. Doesn't matter how much you betrayed me, denied me, abandoned me. You are recommissioned. Some of you are here today. You have been on the spiritual sidelines for so long. And you've been there because you thought all these things kept you from ever being able to do anything that was significant for Jesus. And I ask you to listen to the words of Jesus himself. Do you love me? And if the answer is yes, then follow to verse 19. Jesus says to him, follow me. Follow me. How is God calling you to go this morning? How is God challenging you not to do everything, but just to take one step of obedience in going this morning? But listen, Jesus and Peter, before they departed for a final time, Jesus sets Peter and sets us on a greater mission, not even just to share about Jesus and show the love of Jesus. It's more than that. When you go to what we call the Great Commission in Matthew chapter 28, we see that Jesus tells Peter and he commissions to us to make disciples. Don't just get someone saved so they can get into heaven. Lead them to become transformed followers of Jesus. This is what we've been talking about this whole 5 weeks, is leading people from here to here. Not just those that are seeking, but those that are sent out, so much so that they are bringing other people to know more about Jesus. This is what I'm talking about. We're just going back to the basic principles of what Jesus is actually talking about. And listen, what this ultimately talks about is for you and I to think through how we can leave a spiritual legacy. I've been thinking a lot about this lately, about what does it look like to leave a legacy behind? When I die, all of us are, sad news, all of us one day will die. We're gonna have an obituary that has our name written on it. We don't know the day, we don't know the time, we don't know the hour, but it's gonna happen. And so I guess I want us to ask the question, have you thought through the end game? Have you thought through, at the end of my life, what do I want to be known for? What do I want my legacy to be? What do I want my family and friends and coworkers? What do I want everyone around me to know about me? When they're at my funeral, what do I want them to say about me? Even church-wide, what do we want our church to be known for? And I think it ultimately comes down to this principle of making disciples, individuals that we lead people not only to get baptized, to see individuals that have a 180 in their life and is transformative, not even just experience, but transformative relationship with Jesus, but so much so that we are constantly, continually teaching them to observe everything that we've commanded them to do. This is really this element, this last final thing that we're going to talk about in this series, this concept of multiplying. As a church, this is probably one of the weak points for all of Christianity. and yet needs to be the primary focus for the rest of our days. This aspect of developing, empowering people that are here to mobilize the next generation to become transformed followers of Jesus. It's the long game. It's thinking through how people can be radically changed generations from now. Have you ever thought about that? With your family, have you thought about how I can make an impact on them for generations to come? You know what Paul says to his protege, Timothy? He's training him up, and he says, listen to me, Timothy. What you've heard me say, what I've taught you, what you've heard me say and teach and speak about and how I've lived my life, entrust to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. Did you catch how many generations that was? Paul to Timothy, to Timothy's followers, to then who? To Timothy's followers' followers. That's four generations. Have you thought through that your life can have a multi-generational impact on people? If you're thinking the long game. Listen, I think... personally, I want to leave a spiritual legacy behind. Do you want to leave a spiritual legacy behind? That's why, as a church, we've been doing things like this Parent Path class every other month. And the reason that we've been doing this class, you want to know why? The reason we've been doing it is because we want to give tools and resources to parents so that they can take those and they can have a spiritual legacy they pass on to their kids, and their kids pass it on to their grandkids and to their great-grandkids all the way through. Listen, we need to think bigger than just our own lives. If we're just thinking about our own lives, if our spiritual legacy ends at us, we have failed at something. We need to think about passing the torch, giving it along. Listen, I am not looking to be remembered or have a Wikipedia page. I don't care about that. And I pray that this is your prayer too, that when I die, I want to be remembered for leaving not just a spiritual legacy, but I want to leave this world spiritually better than I left it. That when I left it, that it was better, that it was spiritually better off than when it started. And I hope that's that way for you too. And listen, I know that Jesus will accomplish this work. I know it because he is the one that not only commissions us to do it, but he says, listen, I am with you always to the end of the age. This will be accomplished because I am in the midst of it. And so, as we wrap up this series, as we wrap up this conversation of the church's mission, vision, as we go forward, I just want to challenge us today to be mobilized people that lead others to become transformed followers of Jesus. Listen, as we've gone throughout these weeks, you might find yourself in one of these brackets. You might still be here and you're seeking. You're seeking to know about God, but you like what Jesus has to offer, but you really still need to learn more and want to learn more about who he really is. Some of you are here today, you're like, yes, I've professed Jesus as Savior, but you know what? I have not fully surrendered the things that I'm holding on tight to and I need to let go. Some of you are here today that you have surrendered, but man, I want to grow. I need to spiritually grow. I can't just be so dependent on other people. And I don't want it to just be head knowledge, but I want it to be heart knowledge that leads us into action. I just want to challenge us today.